thank you for joining us on The Skeptic Psychic, where we delve into ancient societies, ghosts, the paranormal, UFOs, all looking at it from the perspective of the true believer and from the skeptic perspective. Joining me, my partner, my co-host, my sibling, Kimber Rodriguez. Myself, I am Richard Gregg. And again, let's look into being the skeptic psychic.
Hello, it's me. I just want to say, doobadoobadoobadoo. Okay, never mind. Hi, welcome once again to the Skeptic Psychic, where we delve into the wonderful world. But tonight, we're going to, you know, I know some of you out there are like, you know, this whole ghost hunting thing, what's it all about? What equipment do you need? Who do I join? Do I trust the people I'm going with? Do I want to go with these people? And what about the house itself? Is it haunted? Is it not haunted? And everything you want to do, we're going to discuss the basics.
Yes, I bet you're wondering, how do I get started? What's the safest way to do it?
How do I get started? What's the basic way to do it? Should I get people that I know and I know are total strangers that'll leave me in a haunted house by myself in the middle of the night? These are the questions I know these people want to ask.
Also, I'm sure there's many questions of how do I keep myself safe and how do I prevent bringing anything home with me as well? Hi,
Hello,
Jackie. Which Jackie do we have tonight?
Is this going to talk about ghost Jackie or is this Jackie? Other hills are alive. That is a very good question because we have
our wonderful niece Jackie, and then we also have our great friend Jackie from Learn About Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Learn About Ghosts. Welcome, Jackie. I'm glad you could make it back tonight.
We give you 2 thumbs up.
Yes. If you are watching on YouTube,
we can also give you 4 fingers up, 2 thumbs as well. That gives you 10. Hello, who are you going to call? Parapsychology Incorporated, ladies and gentlemen.
Isn't that the name that you came up with when you wanted to be a Ghostbuster?
Yep.
I remember that. Yes, back when we were kids, Rick wanted to be a real official Ghostbuster.
Yes. And also to note the fact, the other day I was wearing my T-shirt of the movie, and some ladies were like, oh, look, who are you going to call? I said, Parapsychology Incorporated. She looked like, what? I said, never mind, that's over your head.
Obscure boy strikes again.
Yes.
But yes, if you're watching us on YouTube, we ask that you like and subscribe and click the notifications. Also, if you're watching on Twitch, please like and subscribe. If you're watching a replay if you're listening to a replay, I should say, through podcasts such as Apple, Spotify, Amazon, any of those, we do ask that you rate us and review us. And as Richard's pointing out, we do like 5 stars, but we'll take whatever you give us. We do read reviews on air, so please, please, please leave us a review. And I wanted to go ahead and kick tonight off. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I've got a little bit of a chest pain, but I think that's because I've been stressing out a little bit too much. Yesterday, I do like to apologize, everybody. We had a severe windstorm with actually wind speeds up to 35 miles an hour.
Yes, knocked out his internet and his electricity.
Off and on all day, but we did get the internet back up to around 6:30 last night.
Yes, so we had to reschedule for today. Thank you for understanding, everybody. But I wanted to go ahead and tonight talk about an article that was sent to me by my beloved sister-in-law, aka your wife.
My wife?
Your wife sent me
my
this
wife.
Article. Well,
oh no!
Yeah.
What was my wife doing, sending articles to you without my permission?
She thought I would be interested. Yes, that too.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm going to go ahead and share my screen.
Hello, Katku.
Yes, one second. Let's see. Be just one moment while I bring this up. Okay, the president of Mexico claims he has proof of mythical woodland creatures. And the president recently shared this photo saying that it was a mischievous Mayan spirit that they call an alux. I'm not sure how you would say that in Spanish, but this photo seems to have been taken at night, and he claims that it was taken by a construction worker, and it supposedly resembles a sculpture from a site in the Yucatan Peninsula. He says it was taken again 3 days earlier by an engineer on the construction site of a new way line. And as you can see, here is the supposed quote unquote woodland creature. And next to it is a picture of what it's supposed to resemble, which is the sculpture. Now, a lot of people think that he's lying about this, that he's trying to pull a power trip, because there's a lot of protesting going on right now about some things that he's doing that people don't agree with in Mexico. Another noted that this picture, if you look it up, it's actually from 2 years earlier than when he supposedly posted this picture and saying he believed in it. Well, that, you know, I just wanted to share that just for, you know, really quick, see what y'all thought of it. Do you think it looks like a woodland creature? Do you think it is photoshopped? Do you think it could be an animal? You know, I just wanted to get thoughts and opinions of our readers. And we do also have that posted in our Facebook group if anybody would like to check that out. And so I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing for now. And I don't know, Rick, what are your thoughts on that?
That is a very interesting picture. And it the question remains, is it, could it be just some type of E, fake, B, a natural creature, or C, a witch doctor, per se, being in the tree trying to, you know, ward off creatures.
And evil spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Jackie says that about 10 minutes ago, she was actually playing with that photo, trying to figure it out and see if it's real or fake. So that's really a big coincidence, really, really interesting. And I don't know, to me, could there be sloths or some kind of creature like that in Mexico? Because it looks like maybe it could be.
They do have monkeys.
It could be a monkey. I'm leaning more towards that. Maybe, like you said, somebody up in the tree that's a real person.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Jackie does say that her jury is still running out there. And she's
the jury is still out on her end, whether it's fake or not.
Yes, that's what I meant. Thank you. And that she's going to post her findings on her group. Which is Learn About Ghosts. It's an awesome group. I recommend people checking it out. Again, it's another group where you can safely post pictures, give opinions, and we look forward to what her findings are on that photo. And so why don't we get into tonight's topic, unless there's anything else that you need to cover or you want to discuss?
Well, not much to cover. We can all, you know, there are some things that we will be discussing and possibly showing some footage, but we want you to know always, again, this is the Skeptic Psychic, so we do take things with a grain of salt. We're not going to be all I mean, stuff that even we both either do or do not believe in, we take it at a very proper skeptical level.
Very respectful.
Very respectful. And yes, we may make jokes, but we do not mean any harm in making jokes. And we just like to stress this fact because we are going to be talking about ghost hunting tonight, 101. And a lot of people, when they go out ghost hunting, we're going to tell you some few rules that possibly may help you out on your next, if you're starting it or you're an advanced ghost hunter. Is that clear enough to everybody?
Yes. Raymond does say that he wasn't able to see the photos very well. It is posted in the Facebook group, Raymond, if you'd like to check out that article. And for anybody else who wants more information on it, the article is posted there in our Facebook group, Skeptic Psychic, and you can read through the article and find out some background more about it. But yeah, let's go ahead and jump right into it. Like jump to kick right it off?
In. I sure will, because you do hear footsteps, but you're not alone. You see flashes out of the corner of your eyes. You walk through a very cold spot while the rest of the area is still warm. A popular movie would have had you call for help, but with some tips, hints, and downright rules, you can do your own searching for evidence as well as answers. First off, and most importantly, do research on the area or place what you want to investigate. Don't rely on online sites to tell you what happened. Dig into the history yourself. You can find newspaper articles, military records, court records, and so much more that will give you a true story of what went on there. There's far more interesting stories that I've found on my own that was the media hype story. Libraries are still a great place to look at local information. They might offer old local maps, pictures, folklore history, and past events. Look to see if there's a historical society in your area. You can often find old diaries, pictures, family trees, histories of the home ownership where notable residents lived, birth, and death information. And if you're lucky, a little gossip there for when around the area.
Yes. Make sure you keep a folder of the information you find. Some info you find may not think you need it, but it may answer a question that you have down the road. It's better to have too much information than not enough. So you might find that, you know, Uncle Bob came stumbling in the door one night drunker than, as you would say, Cooter Schmidt.
Cooter Smith. And yes, we used to know Cooter Smith, yes. Didn't we?
I did not, but you must have.
Yes.
We did have an Uncle Bob, though.
Yes.
And you might think that that information is irrelevant until you start hearing that stumbling and knocking through your house that you may lead to Uncle Bob coming in drunk.
Right. Now, so you might... was this, you know, on TV and YouTube, you see young people alone running around, not actually investigating, just looking for something spooky. That's not a good way to do ghost hunting, I'm sorry to say.
Yes, it's one, disrespectful to the spirits, and two, it's leading them to something that might be either physically or somehow dangerous to them. But again, as I was saying, you do want to keep the information in a folder, get more information than you need, because, you know, you don't want to experience something and then forget what evidence you found to support that. Also, having that information helps you to support your findings and helps you to tell people, look, this is what I hear, this is what I found. So it's a really good backup for you to validate your case. Also, you want to write down any activity that has been reported, where it happened and when it happened, the time of day.
Excuse me.
And the date that it happened. Dates can be important if you're going. You okay
me.
There?
Yeah.
You need to take a drink?
I didn't even bring one. I'm sorry.
Oh. I got mine right here. Always okay. ready, always right. prepared.
Okay.
Yes, dates are important if you're going to a battlefield or a murder site. The reason that dates are important is because if it's happening on the anniversary of a great emotional trauma or a sudden death, this could be what they call a residual haunting. And a residual haunting is a non-interacting action from the past. It's not aware that you're there. It just repeats itself over and over again, like it's on replay. You might, hear a rattling at the same time every day. And it never, if you try to speak out to it, you don't get a response. Or, you see somebody walk by, but they don't seem to ever acknowledge that you're there. These they consider like energy that's repeating over and over again. And so it's residual. You also want to document the type of evidence that you have, such as a story, a picture, an EVP, personal happenings to people while there. Because if the activity is repeating, you want to try to find out when it first was reported and how it developed over time. The more you understand and the more that you have verified, the more confident you will feel when you go into the investigation. Remember, this is just an investigation. If you have the answers to the past, the better the new evidence will be. It'll be honest, meaningful, reliable, and believable, and validated. The other thing that's very, very, very important that I cannot stress enough is do not trespass. This isn't cool, it isn't safe, nor is it what real investigators do. You do want to get written consent from the owner, not just hearsay or yeah, you can go. No, make sure they write something down and sign it. So in case cops come and say, hey, why are you here? Who are you? You can show them, hey, I'm doing an investigation. Here's the paperwork from the owner. They have authorized it, and that keeps you safe from being arrested. Also, if there's a liability, if you get hurt, it's really good to have everything in written format to protect yourself as well as protect the owners from any liabilities. If you are going to a popular haunt, you will probably need to sign a waiver, again, protecting the owner. Make sure you read over the paperwork so you expand so that you understand exactly what is expected of you, what you can expect if you fall or if the ceiling falls on you or on your equipment or anything like that. Raymond says if you're doing EVPs, you need to give time for questions, give time between the questions for an answer. Yes, and we will talk about EVPs in just a bit here.
During the day, it's most likely when you want to make out your battle plans. Of course, after getting permission, see what the condition of the building is. Check out where the exits are, where bathrooms might be, and any unstable areas where walking may be dangerous. Map out where any hot spots have been experienced before. Using the info you've gathered from the past ghost studies there, figuring out where and where they may not be hearing things, where things felt, where they were seen, and if you planned on using any type of equipment. Plan on where the items will be placed for the best chance of evidence to be encountered. Investigations involved outside. Check the grounds for holes, uneven land, weeds, pricklers, or stickers, poison ivies, bees' nests, things that can feel like may they go visit go bad. Find the boundaries of the property and remember not to go on another person's property. Never, if you're investigating outdoors and you come up to a fence, don't jump the fence. Also, do not go alone. Ghost spotting is like an extreme sport. The adrenaline rush is massive, and the emotions fill you up, and you will handle it better if you have someone to, say, talk to, verify the evidence. Better still is sharing with all you have experienced together. Others can also help carry the equipment, bring their own, and keep up with you being alone while you wait for something to happen. More on waiting and equipment later. But it's extremely unsafe. Yeah, extremely simply unsafe, I'm sorry to say, to be placed alone at night. Physically, you could get hurt. Mentally, you may have a freak out, and fear will make that lose perception and emotional. You may become overwhelmed. Again, you will physically, if you feel something scary, you may physically hurt yourself. Mentally, you're going to freak out, and fear will make you lose perspective, and emotions will become overwhelmed. Now, to be kindergarten types things, there are several ghost tours in many areas. They could be a good place to see what it's like. They could be hard to get into as they're a popular activity in today's society. The internet can be a good place to find what open tours are available.
Yes. Another reason you want to be careful when you go through these places and why you don't want to go alone is a lot of these abandoned places have been claimed for homes of the homeless. And they can be very hostile when you're invading their space or their territory. So that's why you don't want to go into one of these situations alone again, because you don't know what's in that place. It could be people, there could be faulty wiring, there could be anything that could cause you harm. But yes, I did actually go on a ghost tour. As Richard mentioned last week, we went to a ghost tour through San Antonio downtown, and it took us to all these places around downtown near the Alamo Plaza, and talked about some of the haunts that went on there. And it was very interesting, very educational history-wise, and a lot of fun. So I do recommend, if you do want to kind of get your feet wet and you want to find out about haunted areas without actually going on a ghost hunt, you can always do a ghost tour.
And many of those ghost tours do have permissions from the local businesses as well as the areas to explore and take information.
Yes, they should all. If they're going to be bringing people through, they should all have permission from the owners of the area to take you through. And you also have to sign to make sure that if anything happens to you and all that fun stuff. But again, do not go alone. You may want to try and find like-minded investigators. These are people who want to know the history, who want to be responsible about the investigating. And they don't want theatrics throughout the time there. Getting everyone up to speed on the history, the reports, and the site can make everyone's time more productive. If you do have a person that's prone to sudden emotions, bear that in mind while with them. Nobody wants a "dude, run!" memory of their hunt. Yes, good old Brian from Ghost Hunters. Yes. Sadly, that's what he will be remembered from. "Dude, run."
Now, also, I'd like to iterate the fact of you also don't want somebody who is over. You don't want somebody that's not overcautious. I mean, you don't want some extreme guy going up there. Yeah, I could walk over that. That broken timber right there and jump, you know, you don't want that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You also don't want that somebody that is going to be negative Nancy all throughout that.
Definitely no negativity.
No negative vibes, man.
Yes. And if they do get into flights of fancy, try to reground them to what you all are trying to accomplish. They may feel things that may make them want to escape. And as long as there's no current real-time danger, try to use what is happening to get answers and information. You also want to be sure that you dress for where you're going and what you'll be doing. You don't want to be wearing high-heeled boots.
Put on your high-heeled sneakers.
Yes, that is just for views on the internet.
No, that's actually not for... it's a song lyric.
Yes. You want to wear comfortable shoes for walking and standing, your socks to be non-constricting, and if you're going to a cold, drafty place, make sure that you're wearing comfortable layers. If you do get hot, you can always take layers off. Remember this. Hikers have a saying that cotton kills. It doesn't hold warmth then. It doesn't wick out moisture. Cotton material doesn't hold in warmth. Oh, sorry. I just said that. Mm-hmm. ADD brain got off track due to looking at messages. Make sure that you are wearing an insulated material that will keep you warmer and more comfortable. Hat and gloves can be true comfort in the middle of the night. You also want to wear your hair in a comfortable way if it's long. And if the area is full of cobwebs, spiders, dust and dirt, with old plaster grit in the air, a bandana or a mask or something to keep your face covered as well as keep stuff off your hair, you could wear a hat or a bandana. Another must is a first aid kit. And take any medicines you may need with you, such as if you have asthma, bring your inhaler. If you have allergies, bring an EpiPen. Basically, the rule is that if you need an EpiPen to be seen at the emergency department of the hospital, make sure you have it with you. I'm sorry. If you need an EpiPen, make sure you go to the hospital also. You also want to make sure you have water and snacks because you're going to be there for several hours. And you do want to have your ID with you. So again, if the cops come or if something were to happen to you, you would have your ID on you that they could know who you are. And you should also have that permission with you again in case somebody comes and says, what are you doing here? You have proof that you're allowed to be there. Just a couple of quick messages that got me off topic. Sorry, I was reading the messages and got off. You also want to have no alcohol or drugs before the investigation, as being under the influence isn't safe on any level. And no shiny hair clips or jewelry that can affect photos with reflections, glares, or false orbs. And those are both from Jackie at Learn About Ghosts, as she is a seasoned ghost hunter herself. So any input she can give on this, we appreciate greatly. Love you, Jackie.
Now, being that you've gotten the right clothes, you've gotten permission, you went on a ghost tour just to see what it was like, let's go ahead and discuss embarking on that ghost hunting adventure. Make sure you've got some necessary supplies. For a beginner, advanced, or even the most expert ghost hunter ever, you need a pen and a piece of paper to keep track of any paranormal observations, any research you may have had, or any normal occurrences that are affecting possibly the paranormal. You need a camera, a flashlight, and this day and age, definitely a mobile phone for using emergencies or to track the time. Digital recorders are really good basic tools. Cheap ones are great because they generate white noise, which spirits speak within with their EVPs, also known as electronic voice phenomenon. It can be a Class A, B, or C. A's are usually unbelievably clear, as you can easily make out the words. Nick Grove, everybody knows who Nick Grove talks about the fact that he at one of his last locations, he was asking questions and playing them back on the EVPs, and the spirits said our full names in clear voices, and actually were responding to our questions. Really bizarre. A member of Nick Grove, Ghost Adventurers. Love to actually meet the guy, sit down and talk to him, but I don't agree with a lot of the way he handles the hauntings.
Actually, Nick, he's gone on to do other shows, and he's very different in what you see on Ghost Hunters. If you've seen him on, like, Paranormal Lockdown or any of those, he's actually pretty chill, down to earth with his, very professional with his investigations, from what I've seen.
Also, from Steve Gonzalez of the Ghost Hunters.
Ooh, Steve. Oh, sorry.
I've heard he's a really nice guy as well.
Yeah, nice to look at.
Yeah.
Sorry, I digress. Go on.
Nobody in the Ghost Hunters group is nice to look at to me. I have a beautiful wife that I love so much that, you know, I don't need to look at any other woman.
Ah, okay. So what does Steve like to say?
Steve says if you're using a digital recorder function on your phone, be sure that the phone is set to airplane or offline mode to prevent the phone from sending and receiving signals. There is a very, 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 very slight chance that your audio recording could be contaminated by a rogue frequency and even a phone call transmission. Airplane mode will negate that possibility.
Interesting. That's a good tip. Yes. I've thought about using my phone to record, but it's good to know that, you know, you could be getting interference if it's not on airplane mode. Another thing that will help if there are three or more in your group would be a two-way radio. This is a radio with a 2-mile radius, and we know growing up as walkie-talkies. There's also EMF meters, which are good to find fluctuation in the magnetic field that could be caused by ghost apparitions. Keep in mind that if your gauge is picking up a reading, that doesn't necessarily mean there is paranormal there. Just a better chance of the possibility. By that, I mean, make sure your readings aren't coming from a natural or man-made source, such as an electrical outlet, wires, or appliances before you credit reading to a ghost.
Now, say that even dead wires can still give you off a electrical current.
Yes, you want to run it through the wire, see if that might be it. Interesting to note, the night that we went on the ghost tour, we did have EMF readers with us. And throughout the whole night, they didn't go on until we passed by this one streetlight crossing one of the streets in downtown San Antonio. And the only meter to go off while crossing was Mercy's. And we did try to recreate it. You know, we went back to exactly where he was standing. We tried all these different things, and we couldn't get a recreation of that meter going off the way it did for him. Now, I'm not saying that it was a ghost that set it off, but I'm not saying that it wasn't a ghost. We'll never know, really. But I just thought that was very interesting that that happened. Now, if you don't have an EMF reader, you can also try using a compass, which is very interesting. I never knew this, but if it starts having trouble finding north, it means that a spirit could be interfering with it. Also, digital thermometers can point out cold or warm spots, but you don't want to point them at metal, because metal will show colder, but that is the nature of metal, and it's not supernatural. Some theory suggests that spirits lower energy in the area. I'm sorry, spirit energy lowers
the area temperature
area. Yeah. Because they're drawing from the energy to manifest, so that creates the colder air. And many investigators are using tracking methods such as laser grid systems to highlight the motion and temperature targeted within the area. I remember when Mercy used to work at Jack in the Box, and this Jack in the Box was supposedly haunted by a little girl who had died there. And this was way before it was a Jack in the Box, but supposedly people had seen the girl or heard her. And then Mercy used to tell me, he's like, babe, I found evidence that the Jack in the Box is haunted. I'm like, really? What was your evidence? And he'd be like, there's one spot in the entire store that's colder than any other spot, and that's where the ghost is. And I was like, right. And where is this spot? He'd be like, if you go into the freezer, right beside the vent, it's colder than any other place
in the store.
Oh, goodness. I was like, right, babe. Okay.
Yes, that same little girl actually would hide out in the refrigeration. In the refrigerator. According
Did
to what
you ever see her?
I felt her, and it's the exact opposite.
Ah.
Instead of getting a cold spot, you actually got a very warm warmness whenever you felt her in the refrigerator.
Interesting.
I've had several employees. I've talked with several employees at that same Jack in the Box, and they said that they'd actually the spirit was interactive. One lady said that she was pulling stuff off of one of the shelves, and she heard a little girl voice going, "What are you doing?"
I think that was the that was from there. One of the managers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember her telling me that story as well. But I digress. Little tangent there. Go on.
Well, if you are going to take yourself a video camera, GhostHuntersEquipment.com suggests an SLS camera, which stands for Structured Light Sensor. It has an infrared light projector with a monochrome CMOS sensor that shows everything as dots arranged in 3D formation. The software sees people by recognizing joints and movements. The IR will detect paranormal entities that the program recognizes as a human shape based on body parts and joints. Now, interesting to note, the SLS camera was developed not for ghost hunting, ladies and gentlemen. It was actually developed for the video game industry. Such games as Mortal Kombat, the time travels, that sort of thing, where they actually would take the SLS camera and pinpoint the joints and set it onto, download it onto the computer and create their characters from that. Now, the investigator itself will aim the SLS at an area, and if a spirit is there, it will show up as a stick figure-like person. If a person walks in front of the SLS, it'll show the stick figure and an outline of the person. A spirit will not have an outline, or so the theory goes. Shining it down a hallway and a random stick figure pops up, it's mapping out a humanoid object. The SLS, often used by paranormal investigators, was invented by renowned engineer Bill Chappell, and is based on the kinetic gaming technology, which is what I explained earlier. A REM pod, radiating electromagnetic, the small device has an antenna with its own electrical magnetic field. It finds and reacts to anything that gets near it. The REM pod has an EMF radiating antenna that detects energy disturbances and fluctuates using multicolor lights and an audio alarm. It's basically an electronic field detector of static. It's designed to emit a field which can be broken by anything that has its own EM field, i.e. our bodies, leftover energy. When we die as a ghost, to manually set it off, you have to get very close to the antenna, approximately 6 inches, and actually touch it. Walking nearby or waving a hand around even a short distance does not set it off. You must be careful about placement. Mobile devices and walkie-talkies will set it off if you use them too closely to the device.
Jackie says, I just saw on Learn About Ghosts the lights that light up when a sound is detected. They say, I love that. It would let you know before you review your tape so you can see if there may be a sound. Also, the graveyard stick figures is creepy in the Teslas. Yeah, I think those SLS cameras are actually pretty cool. I've seen some interesting things on ghost shows with them. And it's very interesting to find out that it's based on the Kinect gaming technology. So does that mean that I can take my Xbox to a ghost hunt and use the Kinect camera to do my ghost hunting to see if I get any stick figures?
I doubt that very seriously.
Oh, man.
I mean.
Yes. Another thing Mercy used to tell me is that if he went on a ghost hunt, he would take a portable gaming system like a DS or something, so that if his batteries ran out while he was gaming through the ghost hunt, that would be his proof that there were ghosts there.
Now, if he gets there and he's got a full battery and within 5 seconds of loading it and it dies, that would be a proof of a ghost.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. That was actually Shelly speaking about the EMF detector on lag. Learn About Ghosts, not Jackie. I apologize, Shelly. But yes, I think it would just die because he'd be there the whole time playing the game and run out the battery. Now, if you're looking on the internet, you can find several places that sell spirit equipment. One place is Ghost Stop, and they sell kits from anywhere from around $150 to $600. They even have, which I've seen on shows, and I think it's adorable, would love to have one, they sell what is called a Boo Bear. And this is an interactive a teddy bear. It can detect environmental changes, speaks, and responses with a built-in spirit box. It can also be programmed with EMF questions. And again, I've seen this bear used on several different ghost hunting shows where they are interacting with child spirits. They'll put the bear out to interact with the child spirit as a toy for them to play with. And it's just the cutest thing. And they get some of the cutest responses with that bear. You can also check Amazon and eBay for equipment as well. You can buy the bear on Amazon, they say. That is awesome.
That tickles.
Yes, it is super cute. It says that when the ghost touches it. It's the cutest thing. Now, if you want to use trigger objects, you can do that as well. Children, this bear could be used as a trigger object, or you can also roll a ball, and that may entertain a child ghost. You can also try a doll or a toy train, which can cause activity. Also, if you have pictures, newspaper clippings, diaries, anything that'll resonate with a ghost may give you good readings. So say like you find some history, you find a diary that was written by a spirit who supposedly died there. You could possibly, you know, take some excerpts from that diary or something, and that might bring the ghost out. Then you have places like the Lizzie Borden home where they have personal items to help draw out the ghost. Along the same lines as trigger objects, if you know the spirit spoke in a different language or in an old dialect, you may want to learn some lines to say when communicating, as it may get a response and show you that you truly are trying to get them to speak with them. I remember this one episode of Kindred Spirits. Love the show. And they went to a home that was supposedly haunted, and they kept trying to communicate with the spirit and talk to the spirit, and they were not getting any responses at all. And then finally it dawned on them that the ghost was someone who was Polish. So they brought in someone who was Polish and spoke fluent Polish language. And so they started, you know, asking questions, and the person would translate the questions in Polish. And surprisingly, all of a sudden they started getting communication. The ghost was responding to them in Polish. And then the person would, you know, translate to English what the ghost was saying. So if you know, that might be a good idea to have either learn yourself some of the language or bring somebody along who speaks the language, and it might help improve if you're dealing with a foreign spirit as far as what kind of experience you're getting.
I do also remember an episode of Portals to Hell where they went to the Black Swan Inn in San Antonio, Texas, and they had a assistant that spoke Spanish, or mm-hmm. the equivalent of Spanish that that Mexicans would actually speak. So he tried to speak to the spirit in a using his Spanish, and the responses were coming back with the old pronunciations and the old he says, you know, that no one's really talk. My grandmother used to talk like this when she was when I was young, but you know, of how that he, but actually he was getting responses back.
Yes, I remember that episode as well. Again, being from San Antonio, was really excited to hear that, see that episode.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, in your typical investigator deal with the spirit world, and should therefore include some form of spiritual protection. I want to stress that investigating without spiritual protection before and after could be opening yourself for an entity to attach itself to your home or to your equipment. Protect yourself. P-R-O-T-E-C-T, yourself. The people with you, the homeowners, your equipment, with some kind of prayer, chant, or protection spell. Once a suggested prayer before a hunt, is this in the name of the goddess of goodness and light? Surround our circle in the white light of holy protection. We ask that no harm befalls or follows the protected circle, and that our quest benefit all who among us. In the name of all that is goodness and light, we thank you for your protection of the white holy light. Amen.
Yes, Shelley says that she saw an episode where they would play 1920s music at an old ballroom to get responses. Also, Raymond says that he saw on Ghost Hunters, they would sometimes use flashlights to communicate with ghosts. Pretty cool. Yeah, that's another thing you can do, is you can have your flashlight there and leave it on and ask them to turn it off, or vice versa.
And how you can do that? Let me explain to you. If you turn it just a little clockwise to where it's barely making a connection, but enough to make a connection where it does you can actually have it turn on or off.
Yes. And if you want him to say like yes or no, you can have multiple flashlights there, so that if the answer is yes, turn this one on. If the answer is no, turn that one on. So that's another way that you can try to communicate with spirits. Again, paranormal investigations do deal with the spirit world and should therefore include some kind of spiritual protection. Investigating without spiritual protection before and after could be opening yourself up for an entity to attach itself to you or to your equipment. This is why you want to protect yourself and the people with you, the homeowners, and your equipment with some kind of prayer. Again, I'm just reiterating what you did say before. Another thing that's very important that I don't think we have here is be very, very careful with provoking. I, for one, would not provoke spirits whatsoever, but different people have different beliefs. Provoking, in my opinion, is disrespectful. You would not talk to a regular person that way, so why would you talk to a spirit that way? Two, if you're dealing with evil entities and you provoke, you could make them angry to where they would lash out, and it's more possible for them to cause harm. So in my personal opinion, you should not provoke at all. Now, if you think it's okay to provoke, be very, very, very careful when doing so. Because again, you are being disrespectful to the spirit, and or you are opening yourself up to being harmed by angry spirits. Before you leave, you should, again, all together, say a closing prayer. This includes a thank you for the spirits for taking the time to speak with you. And a good one is, spirits of light, we appreciate and thank you for your time and wisdom. In the name of Jesus Christ, we command all spirits, energy, and entities in this place to return from whence they came and be bound to the confines of this location. You are not allowed to attach to our equipment or to follow us. We ask that the Holy Spirit watch over this place and the people in it, cleansing the space with holy light and keeping evil at bay. We command all inhuman spirits to go where Jesus Christ tells you to go, for it is he who commands you. Amen.
Amen.
Some investigators will burn sage around themselves and their cars before leaving again. So make sure that you have these or whatever prayers you are using with you. When you enter the home or place you are investigating, again, be respectful, not only of the spirits, but the place itself, and leave things as you find them. Act as if you are an investigator. Be methodical, be calm. And again, be respectful of the spirits and your surroundings.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to thee.
Take out the TCP. Never understood that part, but okay.
All right.
Raymond says that no way he would provoke. If you provoke, you're not taking it seriously and you should leave. I full-heartedly
agree. Totally
agree.
Yes. Now, when trying to get your EVPs, speak clearly, slowly, wait for the answer. If you make a noise, be sure to say while recording, "That was me coughing," or "I kicked by a rock by accident," so it's not mistaken for a message from the spirit. If you get a response, be sure to write it down in your log. Remember that pad and pen, boys and girls? Note the time, place, and write out what questions that were answered. Ask relevant questions, not like, "Do you like the color blue? Do you like candy?" No, these are actually questions I've seen on different investigations that friends of mine have been in. A good hint is to write out several questions before you go, so you don't have to search your mind for something to ask. If you get a few good answers, you may want to get an answer in a more detailed information. When listening back, think about what it could be, but be open to what others may hear and that same EVP. An older way of talking can be confusing. An EVP at Gettysburg was captured after the question, "What did you do here?" The answer given, "I was seeing the war." "What's this, a reporter killed?" Or was this a way of saying they were part of the fighting? Be prepared. Wait and wait and wait some more. It is not often that a hunt gets much more evidence. Ghosts do not perform on command. They do not seem to decide if they want to be active or they want to stay quiet. They are not there to be your performance. If you're taking it seriously, you're going to be having a conversation, not say, "Oh, ghost boy." That's an insult to the spirit world. You won't get a boo from them. Sometimes as a person turns his mind to something else, drawing, seeing, quietly reading, etc., the spirits may want to interrupt you. Follow your instincts. If you feel you need to take a picture, do it. If you get an impression of a name, say it out loud. Say it proud. You may be tapping into the energy around you. Take many photos, and a good rule is, if you find something in a photo, immediately take a second or third or even a fourth of that same spot at the same time. Seeing before and after, you can really be helpful in trying to understand what's really seeing in the photo.
Yes, the human tendency is to find familiar patterns and somewhat random perceptions. This is known as pareidolia. We tend to recognize familiar shapes. A face in a window could be just a reflection of something outside and not a spirit. Mirrors are wonderlands for this. As the flash of a camera, the movement of a person, a smear on the glass, and so much more can make it seem like a ghost. You may want to try to debunk this evidence to the best of your ability. Rule out everything that can cause a natural occurrence. Also, if you have moving objects, check for drafts. Is the floor level? And has anyone walked by it? Be sure to check your equipment frequently during the investigation. You want to monitor the baselines, which often will let you find any changes in the environment as soon as possible. If you get tired during the hunt, you may want to call it an early night. Because when you are tired, you can miss activity. And you may think you see or hear something because you are sleepy. It's recommended to sleep before the investigation and to get sleep before you review your evidence. Fresh eyes and a sharp mind can find the anomalies and debunk them if possible. Also, a set of second eyes help to debunk things. So it's important to have others look at your evidence as well. You want to ask them what their opinion is. Let them hear EVPs and see what they think they heard before you tell them what you heard, because you don't want to, corrupt the evidence or their opinion of the evidence. But that's pretty much all we have tonight. We thank everybody for joining us. Again, thank you, Shelley Priest, for the amazing research that you did for us this week, looking through all the different equipment and how to protect yourself when doing ghost hunts. Love it as always. Such a pleasure having you on the team. I'm getting there.
I do want to make something stress again.
Okay.
No trespassing.
Yes.
Do not go by yourself. And do not think that you're a hero by going into places that are too dangerous. Do not. No. As much as you think that it's really cool to do not provoke the spirits.
Agreed. I have one more question before we close out tonight.
Yes.
Earlier, we talked about how when you were a teenager and Ghostbusters came out, you wanted to be a parapsychologist.
Yes.
And you came up with a name again. What was the name?
Parapsychology Incorporated.
Now, what changed?
I still would love to be a parapsychologist. But as going into as a spirit medium type situation, no.
Well, Yes, we don't want you to go in as a spirit type medium situation, but
not even extra large situation.
How about a small?
Not even a small.
Raymond says that there's a movie called Deadstream, and it's a funny ghost hunting movie with some scares on Shudder. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah.
But anyway, love to go ghost hunting with you sometime, bro. We got to set that up somehow.
Yeah. Like I said, I would love to do a ghost hunting, but I do not want to open up my mind for anything that will go in there and go, oh, you can talk to ghosts? Hey, you can talk to ghosts. Hi, how's it going? What you up to? What do you want?
Yes. Tell us again, before we go, also, the story about that one time that you went on that ghost hunt.
Ghost tour.
Had that cheese. Was it a ghost tour? I thought it was a ghost hunt. I'm sorry. With the cheesy medium.
Yes, the medium was saying all this wonderful stuff about, you know, oh, the spirit is over there in this corner. It's very, it's very senseless. It's sensing this anger, this anguish. And I hear a voice behind me going, is she for real? Turn around. There was nobody behind me. And I'm like, what? And the meeting was like, oh, you can talk. You've got this special gift. And I hear the voice behind me. You could talk? You're hearing what I'm saying?
Yes. I once remember somebody telling me that when ghosts get around people who are clairsentient or who can, you know, a medium, however you want to say it, and they find out you can talk, it's like being around a deaf person who meets someone who can speak sign language. It's like, finally, somebody who can understand me. And they just want to talk and talk and talk because, you know, they are not used to having that. So, yeah. And someone says, people should write in comments of their experiences to be read out next week. I love that idea. If you would like to share your experiences while ghost hunting, being in a haunted location or anything like that, definitely you can comment here and we'll read them next week. Or you can also email us at info@skepticpsychic. And if you are watching on YouTube.
And Jackie, we would love to have you on the show to actually discuss your own investigations into hauntings as a ghost hunter. I mean, you've also, I understand that you also was an EMT, and you've also had some experiences with ghosts on your routes. So,
Jackie, yes,
this is an open invitation. Contact Kimbra at info@skepticpsychic.com, and we would like to get you on the show to discuss this.
You can also DM me. That's cool, too. But, yes, I would love to have you on, Jackie. But, yeah, if you are watching us on Facebook, we ask that you like and subscribe and hit the notifications so you know when we have new videos and live streams. If you're watching on Twitch, also like and subscribe. Again, if you're listening to this in a podcast rerun, we ask that you like, write, and subscribe. We do like 5 stars. And if you do rate us, please, please, please leave a review, as we do read reviews on air. Awesome. And everybody have a wonderful night. We always enjoy having you here. And
it is
take care, everyone.
Unpleasant nightmares.
Sweet dreams, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Yes, Raymond, shout out to Shelley for the research again. We love it. Good night, everyone.
Good night.